This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about Gaza and the ongoing violence in the occupied West Bank. Over 30,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed. Tens of thousands more have been injured. Five people in Gaza were recently killed after parachutes carrying aid failed to open, crushing and killing people. It's hard to even fathom that. 21 Palestinians in Gaza, including at least 17 children, have died of starvation and dehydration, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. And then there's the West Bank. In a recent essay in The New Yorker, today's guest, award-winning journalist Shane Bauer, traveled to the West Bank to bring us the piece, The Israeli Settlers Attacking Their Palestinian Neighbors. With the world's focus on Gaza, settlers have used wartime chaos as cover for violence and dispossession. Hi, Shane. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. We should mention you're an award-winning investigative journalist and photographer. Before we dive in and talk about your piece, Shane, I just wonder, it's just hard to believe what has happened in Gaza over the past 5 months. I caught a piece from Channel 4 yesterday, devastating. Inside northern Gaza, kids desperate for food and medicine. And they actually show videos of these children with no color in their skin, and they're just so thin and on the verge of death. It's just shocking to see images like this.
It really is. I mean, that's kind of what drove me to get out there in October, to seeing this flood of images. We haven't had a war like this in a long time with this intensity, and also just the availability of daily horrific images. It's very overwhelming. And it reminds, you know, I've reported in Syria quite a bit, and as the war in Gaza unfolded, it really struck me how just the similarities, you know, the way that the bombardment of Gaza, how similar it is to, you know, what Syria is doing for years. And but this time, you know, of course, it's our ally doing this work. The endless stream is really, really horrific.
And these videos are coming from Palestinians inside Gaza. It's so important to note that the Israeli government will not allow journalists to go to Gaza to report for themselves. You went to the West Bank. What is involved in getting to the West Bank?
Well, I just flew into Tel Aviv and essentially drove to Ramallah, and I based myself there for 3 weeks. Getting in and out of Ramallah is a challenge. Navigation apps really don't work in the West Bank just because the constantly evolving checkpoint situation. So I literally could spend an hour just trying to find a way out of the city, because you can kind of try to get out of the city and you'll find a gate that the Israelis close and you just can't move. It's incredibly frustrating. Even just you were mentioning the kind of journalists being targeted in Gaza. I felt that I was in a kind of a unique position to do this story shortly after October 7th. Because I speak Arabic, but I'm not Arab. So, to travel around the West Bank as an Arab is difficult and can be dangerous, dealing with the checkpoints, even if you're not Palestinian. So because I'm white, was able to kind of move around in a way, but then could get to these, access to these villages and actually speak to people where, some other journalists might not be able to do that because they don't have the language. But I did encounter Israeli soldiers, you know, quite a bit. And I had a soldier pull a rifle on me, you know, just I was in an olive grove and suddenly with a photographer, and there's three soldiers above us shouting at us and pointing rifles and cocking them after we had identified ourselves as journalists. It's not an easy climate to work in over there right now.
U.S. sanctions are getting a lot of attention, and I wonder what you think about this. Just yesterday, the U.S. Department of Treasury announced new sanctions against two illegal outposts in the West Bank that were used as a base for attacks by extremist Israeli settlers. The U.S. announced sanctions against Neria Benpazi and Moshe Sharvit, two Israeli settlers you wrote about in this New Yorker piece. And on Twitter, you said, these are two very dangerous men, but the sanctions conspicuously avoid targeting their Israeli state sponsors. Can you tell us more about these men and then talk about the sanctions?
Yeah, absolutely. So Nerya Benbazi, he is a settler who has been creating outposts. So to simplify it, in the West Bank, Israeli government has been building settlements since 1967. And then sometimes settlers will go out on their own and basically try to start a settlement. And these are called outposts. And all settlements are illegal under international law, but these outposts are illegal even under Israeli law. However, what we've seen over the years is that the Israeli government, especially since Netanyahu took power in the 90s, has been encouraging settlers to build these outposts as a means of taking land that doesn't get sort of tied up in Israeli courts. And Benbazi is somebody who, he had started an outpost that was at one point back in around 2015 targeted by the Israeli authorities because of the extremists that lived there. There were people convicted of terrorist charges, Jewish terrorists. But then later Netanyahu started to talk about annexing part of the West Bank, and Benbazi then, his relationship started to change, and the Israeli state started allocating land for him and helping him build outposts. He started working very closely with the authorities. And he, like Moshe Sharbit, started shepherding outposts, sort of a new type of land grab tactic that you see from Israeli settlers, where they essentially start these sheep farms, and then they range their sheep over a large area of land and will violently push out any Palestinians to enter that space. So they're able to control big areas of land. So Benbazi was kind of engaged in this project. After October 7th, he organized the expulsion of a community called Wadi Siq. It was a small Palestinian community of about 40 families. People were tortured, tied up. And he did this with Israeli soldiers. This was not just settlers. So again, showing this close connection to the states. Moshe Sharbit, I actually visited his outpost and met him and his wife, talked to his wife for hours, and she was very open with me about their coordination with the government in establishing their illegal outpost. She said, you know, we're the eyes of the army. The army set up a whole surveillance system on the land around their area that soldiers control. They gave them M16s. They, you know, helped them actually establish the outpost. And Moshe also, you know, after October 7th, displaced a number of Palestinian families around him. So, you know, this kind of new dynamic of imposing sanctions on Israeli settlers is unprecedented from the United States. And you do see in Israel a reaction to this. You know, it does have some kind of impact. And there has been some hints at maybe pressure against some of these settlers internally. But at the same time, it's sort of, you could say, misleading. You know, these sanctions are targeting a small number of settlers when, you know, there are half a million settlers in the West Bank. There are, I mean, hundreds of them that have been extremely violent, especially since October 7th. And the bigger issue is that they're part of a larger project that is a state project. And the state is essentially using these ultra-violent settlers to take land, especially after, I mean, this has been an ongoing process really since 1967, but after October 7th, you know, the settlers have, and the state have really taken advantage of the kind of chaotic situation and the war in Gaza to clear out more territory of Palestinians. And that is the ultimate problem. And any attempt by the United States to do anything would have to address the fact that their ally is engaged in this process. And, you know, this is something we're funding. I mean, it's kind of, it's in a certain way like what's happening in Gaza now, where the United States is sort of trying to provide aid while, you know, the actual bombs that are falling are ours, you know. Mm-hmm. So in the West Bank, our ally is, you know, continuing to expand settlements, and we're allowing that to happen, and then we're kind of slapping a few settlers on the wrist.
And what does it mean exactly to impose sanctions? What changes as a result?
I mean, I think practically for most of these people, little to nothing. They're, you know, if they have assets in the United States, they're frozen. Americans are not allowed to do business with them. But these are people who see themselves as pioneers that are, you know, most of them, especially these kind of ultra militant settlers, are not people who are really traveling internationally. I mean, they're people who are very tied to this area and are sort of the frontier, you know, of they're pushing a frontier. So they're constantly engaged in kind of tensions around taking land. They're not really going on vacations to the United States.
What struck you about what settlers told you? You spoke with Ori Shimon, 20, who said Israel is being unfairly scrutinized. Ori told you, America came with ships and killed all the Indians and made them slaves. It's terrible, but now America doesn't say, we're sorry, take the land back.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I was constantly surprised with things that settlers said to me. That particular quote, I mean, that sentiment I heard several times from settlers and comparing, what is happening in Israel and Palestine to the genocide of Native Americans. And this sort of idea that it's not fair that we're complaining about it because didn't you do the same thing? And also a thing I was surprised by was how much settlers compared the present to 1948. I mean, I think to me, those parallels, to Palestinians, certainly those parallels are very clear. You know, the 48, the expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians from the lands that are now Israel. But now you see settlers making explicit connections to 48. There was, when I was there, settlers had left flyers in one village, telling people to leave to Jordan, telling Palestinians to leave to Jordan, saying the great Nakba is coming. Nakba being the Arabic for the catastrophe, what Palestinians call the great expulsion of 48. One settler leader, head of a regional council, a sort of settler government in the West Bank, told me that today was like 48 because it's a battle over land. He said, you know, it's very explicit and honest. You know, there he saw himself as he compared himself to, actually he spoke of outposts like Moshe Sharbitz and compared them to the 1930s when settlers were trying to expand the territory of their future state by sort of sneaking in the night, and they would set up what they called the wall and tower. It was this very simple sort of structure, and it was sort of their, you know, stake in the ground. And he said, these outposts today are like those, you know, they're essentially markers for us to expand the territory.
We're speaking with Shane Bauer, an award-winning investigative journalist and photographer. He traveled to the occupied West Bank for The New Yorker to bring us this piece, The Israeli Settlers Attacking Their Palestinian Neighbors. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Can you tell us more about what these settlements look like? As you report, about 700,000 Israelis live on over 200 illegal settlements. Many are mini cities that house tens of thousands of people and look like suburban developments. And then others look like hand-built shanty outposts.
Yeah, they really vary. I mean, you know, you can be in a strip mall, supermarket, you know, walking through the lanes with your shopping cart and people toting M16s, very kind of suburban dynamic, except very armed. And then there's places, the outposts in particular, have, again, a more kind of frontier type of vibe. You know, the one of the more notorious outposts for its militancy, I visited. It looked like, you know, it's like dirt road town, shanties, you know, had this kind of Wild West type of feel. Those tend to be inhabited by the more zealous, ideological, religious fundamentalist settlers, whereas the kind of bigger, more established settlements, you have a lot of people who are there, who are secular, even, you know, don't even subscribe to this kind of, millenarian ideology, but are there because it's cheaper, and this, you know, the state of Israel encourages Israelis to settle in the West Bank by offering, you know, various subsidies and tax breaks for people who do move there. So you have this kind of class of settlers who are also, you know, there because it's just cheaper, and you know, they might be kind of lower class Israelis.
Shane, we have just a couple minutes left. What happens to the Palestinians who are pushed off of this land? And in many cases, as you write about, violently forced off of the land.
Look, it's very violent right now in the West Bank, especially coming, you know, the violence from settlers. Palestinians have been prevented. They really, the olive harvest season came and went, and many people did not harvest because the olive groves were extremely dangerous. Settlers would come out and attack people as they harvested, and this, of course, is a tactic to encourage people to leave because they're, you know, robbing them of their livelihood. And then in the more established villages, you have settlers kind of using these tactics, tagging people in the fields, maybe targeting houses that are at the edge of the village. But then the really vulnerable communities are the smaller shepherding communities. And these are the ones targeted by people like Neria Benbazi and Moshe Sharbit. And some of those communities are now gone, literally vanished, ghost towns just in the past few months. And it's important to point out that this sort of spike in settler violence started much before October 7th. Really, all of last year was seeing an escalation of violence, largely because of this sort of new power of extremist settlers within the government of Israel. You know, Israel has its most right-wing government in its history, and these settlers like Ben-Gavir or Bezalel Smotrich have really been, you know, encouraging kind of land seizure and violence. So the people who leave, you know, some move into other towns. Some are still hoping to go back, hoping things change. But none of these communities that I know of that have been emptied out have been restored. The army in Wadi Siq, for example, the town that Neria Benbazi had depopulated, the army itself is not allowing the Palestinians to return. So again, this is an issue that is involving settlers and the military, and settlers themselves are more and more, especially since October 7th, themselves the military. They are also soldiers serving in the areas where they live.
Well, Shane, it's such an important report. Thank you so much for your work on this, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Shane Bauer is an award-winning investigative journalist and photographer. He recently traveled to the West Bank for The New Yorker to bring us the piece, The Israeli Settlers Attacking Their Palestinian Neighbors. He writes, with the world's focus on Gaza, settlers have used wartime chaos as cover for violence and dispossession. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.